We've been doing this podcast for 2 years and a half now, and the most listened to episodes are always the ones talking about career and certifications in treasury. So we decided to partner up with the AFP, the Association for Financial Professionals, so we can offer you a $100 discount code on all of the AFP's products. This includes, of course, the CTP, the Certified Treasury Professional, which is hands down the most renowned and recognized certification in treasury out there. And of course, the access to the CTP exam prep platform as well. Check the link in the description to access to the discount codes and take your career to the next level.
Welcome to the Corporate Treasury 101 podcast. In today's episode, we discuss about treasury, procurement, and AP with Tamir and Rajiv from Coupa. Tamir Shaffer, Area Vice President at Coupa Software, has over 20 years of experience in treasury and finance. Rajiv Ramachandran is the Senior Vice President of Product Strategy and Management for Coupa Pay at Coupa Software, where he has worked for over a decade. Coupa Software provides cloud-based business spend management solutions, helping companies control and optimize their spending through integrated procurement, invoicing, expenses, and payment systems. In today's episode, expect to learn, what does a procurement department typically do? What are the main dependencies between treasury, procurement, and accounts payable? How can data analytics and technology improve treasury's visibility into company spending and payment obligations? What inspired Coupa to link procurement, accounts payable, and treasury, and much more? We hope you enjoy the episode. And if that's the case, when you're thinking about how you find our podcast, chances are it was through word of mouth, social media, or recommendations from your favorite podcast platform. And the best thing you can do to help us keep growing the show is wherever you're listening to us, head over to Apple Podcasts, search for Corporate Treasury 101, and give us a 5-star review. That would mean the world to us and help more people learn about treasury. And with that, please welcome Tamir and Rajiv.
Tamir, Rajiv, welcome on the Corporate Treasury 101. Very, very pleased to have you. It is the first episode of the channel, actually, where we're going to go a bit broader than just treasury. We're going to talk about lots of things and lots of other functions in a typical corporate structure and the interdependencies with treasury, which I'm very much looking forward to your lights on it. So maybe to begin with, let's start a bit high level and let's start with procurement, which when I started in corporate, had no clue what was that. So what does a procurement department typically do? Maybe looking at you, Tamir, to begin with.
Thanks, Guillaume, and appreciate you having us on for today. Rajiv and I are both very excited to have the opportunity to speak with you and obviously on this topic that he and I are both very passionate about. And like you, Guillaume, when we talk about procurement, I also, as a former treasury practitioner, didn't really have an appreciation for what procurement was until I came to Coupa. And then once I learned about procurement, I couldn't believe how much I didn't know as a practitioner that could have improved what my team in treasury operations did. So to answer your question, procurement has become a real important function within many organizations. As they get larger, it becomes that much more important because their role is to be able to find suppliers for goods and services who can provide those goods and services that are crucial to a company being able to run its business. For example, furniture for an office, laptops for its employees, the cloud for where it's going to store all of its internet and all the other types of services that they need the cloud for, etc. So often there's not just one supplier they could work with. There are many suppliers, sometimes dozens, hundreds, or thousands of suppliers a company could work with for that. So a procurement department needs to do a few things. Number one, identify and understand the needs of their own company, then determine, okay, we need to find someone who's going to provide us with laptops. Great. Laptop computers. There are at least 10 different companies we can work with. Let's go out to these 10 companies and understand what they can provide and really do what's called the sourcing exercise of sourcing potential suppliers to provide whatever goods or services they're looking for. In our case, it's laptops. Once they've identified this group that they want to work with, then it's about refining and doing a lot of rigor in the process to boil that group down to really one or two final suppliers who they ultimately want to work with. They may say, we want one supplier, or maybe we want three suppliers as a contingency, so we're not always relying on just a single supplier. But regardless, many different factors are involved in procurement's role in deciding which ones of the suppliers to ultimately work with. That includes, is it a risky company? How's their balance sheet? Do we have recommendations from other companies or other partners that we work with? Things like that. If it's technical, let's make sure our CIO is comfortable with what technology they're using, all the technical aspects. Ultimately, when a procurement gets down to the final decision to work with one or a handful of suppliers, then they have to go through the pricing negotiation process. And that includes not only the pricing, but also the payment terms of when and how they're going to pay those suppliers. So all of that is wrapped up into the procurement function, including identifying who their point person is. And then once they get through that entire process and they've selected the supplier, identified the pricing, negotiated the payment terms, then they wrap up their part of the process and then they hand it off to the company. Go now buy these goods and services from these suppliers that we've identified.
Spend the company's money. Go for it. So I love that. So I love that explanation. Thanks a lot for this, Tamia. Treasury.
And Guillaume, can I add a little bit of a color there? I mean,
yeah, sure. Go ahead, Rajiv.
Let's look at that in a particular use case, right? Let's take the largest car manufacturers in the world, right? You look at BMW on one side. You can look at Tesla, Ford. You take any of them. I mean, look at the product that they're building. The product that they're building requires a lot of things that they source from outside of that company. And so if you look at it from a supply chain standpoint, they are dependent on a lot of other companies to give them the parts and services that are required to make that final BMW or make the final Tesla or make the final Ford to sell. So the revenue of the company is tied to the suppliers who are giving them these parts and services. Now, what does that mean? They need to have a contract with these suppliers, and these suppliers can be in any part of the world, and these contracts could be in millions of dollars in different currencies, and somebody needs to pay them at the right time. Somebody needs to look at what's the size of that contract, what currency is it in, what risk do I have, do I need to hedge for it, right? And that's the job of a treasurer. So you see what's happening here. On one side, you can look at procurement and say, hey, they support us to run the company on a day-to-day basis with services like Amir was saying, whether it's your laptops, whether it's your legal services, marketing service, and all. But on the other side, they're also bringing suppliers who are really responsible for the top line and the bottom line of the company itself. And these contracts are so much critical. I mean, now we are talking about all of this AI stuff. I mean, like, we have chips made by NVIDIA that are being used by pretty much every organization in the world, right? We have, partnerships being set up which can really transform the revenue and the business of every company. And it's the procurement team that's driving it. But really what I think Tamir and I want to highlight here is those contracts, those suppliers require to be thought through as an extension of the company. They need to be paid for, and the risk, and both the financial and liquidity risk and the currency risk for managing those supplies need to be managed. And who better to do that than the treasurers in the company, right? And that's where we see there's billions and trillions of dollars across the world as you look at these contracts and look at these supply chains that need to be managed, and that needs to be thought through very carefully.
Absolutely love that. My next question was around how does that whole department impact the financial health of the organization and efficiency? And I think you answered it quite clearly in that complimentary answer. So thanks a lot, Rajiv, for this. Tamir, anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I think we need to talk about accounts payable a little bit. Do you want to go there next? I think that's the next part of the process.
Yeah, 100%. I would like that. So please go ahead. What's account payable? Explain it to me like I was 5 years old, and let's get a bit into the details then.
Jumping off from where you said, now company go spend the money, right? So assuming the company has done a good job of spending the money to buy these goods and services that procurement created with that procurement contracted with all these suppliers, once the suppliers provide those goods and services, something very important has to happen for those suppliers. They want to now be paid for those goods and services they provided. So typically, what will they do? They'll submit an invoice in order to be paid for their goods and services. And the team that's responsible for managing the invoice retrieval and payment process is accounts payable. But it's not as, explaining like you're a five-year-old, it's not as simple as just receiving it and then paying it. Now, that's not saying that there are some accounts payable team that that's all they do is they receive in the invoice, they look at it, and they make the payment. It's a lot more complex than that. And I think why we're talking today really, really, really talks to the integration that an impact that accounts payable will have with treasury. And what do I mean? So an invoice comes in, it should have which supplier I'm paying, how much we owe that supplier, the payment terms associated. In other words, when does that supplier need to be paid by, how they want to be paid. And we have to make sure that accounts payable needs to make sure that at least when it comes to the payment terms and the payment method, that ties back to what procurement negotiated. Just because a supplier is sending an invoice, it doesn't mean they're adhering to the contract that they just negotiated with procurement. So it's number one, it's account payable's responsibility to ensure that all the terms on the invoice tie back to what was negotiated. Otherwise, why did procurement go through the whole job of doing all this negotiation if accounts payable is not going to be paying attention to those critical contract terms? So that's, I think, number one. Number two, just because an invoice is sent, it doesn't mean those goods and services were provided exactly the way the invoice dictates. So there needs to be some sort of assurance process built in so that accounts payable says, hey, before I make this payment to this supplier, did we receive these goods and services that they're telling us that we received? So that's number two, and that's on accounts payable and a bigger process within the company to ensure that accounts payable has that transparency and visibility that those goods and services were provided. And then ultimately, to make that payment to that supplier. But as Rajiv pointed out, there are some really important nuances on the payment part of it. For example, if a payment is due, if procurement negotiated payment terms of net 30, meaning the supplier gets to be paid on 30 days after the invoice is provided, accounts payable should theoretically wait until day 30 to make that payment. If they're paying earlier than that, then they're just taking liquidity and working capital out of the company before they need to. And what I was telling you before about not knowing as a treasurer the importance of the procurement function, and that is we would often receive, as a cash manager, a daily forecast number from our accounts payable team that said, today we're going to pay out $4 million to our suppliers. We had no idea, and I until coming to Coupa, that, hey, that $4 million decision to payment, is it based on the payment terms A that's listed on the invoice, meaning is accounts payable waiting? And also, did accounts payable think about, is this the terms that procurement set up for me to pay the supplier? Because if procurement set up 45-day payment terms, the invoice says 30-day payment terms, and then I pay on day 20, I've left out 25 days of working capital flexibility, capability, yield on liquidity that I'm giving away. And so that's the importance of the accounts payable function, for them to have that kind of deep dive awareness of the entire process, starting with what procurement did.
And I think it's that working capital that really connects all these functions together, right? You have a supplier, and we call them suppliers, buyers, we call them payers, pays, whatever. But they're two businesses, and both of them are trying to optimize their working capital. You know, on the supplier side, you have them submit an invoice and say, I'm going to pay you after 60 days, which means somebody has to wait 60 days before they get their money. And like Tamir said, on this side, if I can hold that money for 60 days, then probably I have made the best use of the cash that I have in hand. Now, you have optimization models for this working capital. There are businesses that are cash rich. And, you know, in a few years back, you know, we were always talking about, you know, negative interest rates in some countries. And now we are talking about an interest rate environment that has grown up a little bit and probably going to go down again, right? As we are looking at all the different, you know, Federal Reserves across the world, you know, deciding on how they want to look at the interest rate environment. But having said that, your supply chain is a great way to use the cash that you have to generate returns. You know, treasurers on one side can look at cash that's available to them, you know, look at overnight interest rates, you know, cash pool their funds, you know, put it into an investment model and get return on capital. Great. That's one use case for treasurers. The second use case is, hey, can I get 6, 8, 10, 12% APR on capital that I can invest in my supply chain? Because the business on the other side will benefit a lot by getting paid early. Now, it doesn't apply for everybody, but if you are a cash rich company, you have cash on hand, you want to invest that cash, you want to get returns, one way to invest in a fund, you know, money market or whatever it is to get your return back, or take it and invest in your supply chain. You're building a healthy supply chain. We just discussed how much important suppliers and that supply chain is for your business. So making them healthier is good for you. And they're willing to give you a discount for that, which means you're getting return on capital. See, it's that story. It's that story that needs to resonate between whether you're a chief procurement officer, whether you're a controller, or whether you're a treasurer. And having a platform that gives you the visibility across these things so that you can look at your cash balances end of day, invest in your supply chain, get your returns, and have these functions operate seamlessly, that's really where a finance team can really function smoothly and generate returns on both sides. Your suppliers get their returns and their supplier business is healthy. You get returns for your company. And that's the story that we feel is extremely powerful.
Just to follow up on this, Arjun, because I think that's super interesting. What you just explained here is dynamic discounting, basically. To have seen it, it's much easier to talk about it than to implement because there is lots of complexities into it. So how would you put that in place? If we go back to the example of the car manufacturer, for instance, what does it take to put in place a proper dynamic discounting? As you said, that could benefit the whole supply chain. And like you wouldn't even put third parties or in a lesser manner, as you're going to explain. But please walk us through that. How does it work and how do you put that in place?
Absolutely. Let me start with that and Tamir can add to here. I think what we have learned and you know, both of us, like, you know, I've been in this industry now for a little bit over 12 years. And what both of us have learned is the first and foremost principle for success is keeping things simple. I'm telling you, is keeping things simple. Most of our customers, when we look at why programs fail, is people overcomplicate this situation. And one of the real simple things you can do is give both sides of the business a single pane of glass of visibility. Like one of the simplest things we have done to make it successful for our customers is that supplier business has one place to come to receive their purchase orders, to create their invoices, to offer their discounts, and to get paid. I'm telling you, you do that as step one, you will see more and more programs successful. You know what people do otherwise? You register in one place, you get your PO in a different system, you produce your invoice in a different system, you offer your discount in a third system, you go for financing in a fourth system, you have five different KYCs that you go through. I wouldn't want my working capital benefits from such a model. Why would I want it? It'll take me more time and effort to actually do the job than get the working capital benefits. So I you know, it may look like, hey, you know, what's he making up? No, I'm telling you, keeping it simple is the first step towards making this successful. And half of the time, people think that let's think about more complex APRs, let's think about sliding scales. No, that is not where the success is. The success is build a healthy supply chain, offer a fair discount model, making it simple for people to come in, provide that, and take it. And stick to those payment terms. Like Tamir said, there are payment terms. You know, half of the time, what people tell me is, in the business world, nobody sticks by those. Even though you say something is there, people pay whatever they want. You know, that's not right. I mean, like when you have a contract that you're agreeing with, you know, stick with that contract, stick with those payment terms, make those payments happen and make it simple. That'll be one option. The second thing we also say, and Guillaume, I know you mentioned dynamic discounting, but we also bring third-party financing into the mix, right? There are a lot of businesses that may not be, you know, rich on cash, or they may be rich on cash, but they may have needs for that cash. They may be looking at, you know, dividend payouts. They may be looking at acquisitions, but they have a very strong and healthy balance sheet. That's where we have third-party financiers who can actually, you know, provide, you know, capital to those suppliers, but they're taking the risk more on the buyer side. So the weighted average cost of capital at which you're giving that, you know, early payment discount or giving that loan to that supplier is much lower than they would get if they go to a bank and actually apply for a loan. Right? So if you bring the models together, the working capital story is pretty powerful. The working capital story is powerful in the sense that both the sides, the buyer side, the supplier side, the payer side, the payee side, benefit from it. And our strongest recommendation is simplify the process and keep it to a place where people can understand and consume the data easily. And we have seen tremendous amount of success by just following that one principle and then giving people the flexibility, right? Not one size fits all, right? People want the flexibility, whether it's discounting, whether it's financing. If you can give it to them in a single platform, I think customers will see the benefits and so will suppliers.
Tamir, anything to add to that?
A little bit. So Rajiv, that's a really comprehensive answer. Thank you. I think the one thing that Rajiv implied but didn't actually say left out was the word communication. And I think that's really important because the ability for buyers and suppliers to communicate that there is a need, meaning, hey, we're long liquidity, or hey, as a supplier, I'm short cash, can you help? That's a critical component to making a discounting program work. The ability to understand where the other side of the table, where my counterpart is sitting. And it's not just a counterpart, it's a partner. Because as Rajiv said, I'm not going to get far without the supplier. And the supplier knows they're not going to get far without their customer. So this is an ecosystem of where you want to be healthy together. And I'm going to share a story when I was the supplier that I think really talks to this whole thing around dynamic discounting in an interesting way. So several years ago, I was a principal in a small consulting company. And we had about 10 people on our team. And we were providing consulting services to 20 or 30 different companies around treasury. We were providing treasury consulting services. And one particular month, in one particular year, we had prepaid for a conference. And we had another customer who was late in paying us. Our biggest customer was late in paying us. And I had payroll coming up. But today's a Monday. And payroll was due Friday. And I'm thinking, unless I get money from this customer in the next 72 hours, I might not be able to make payroll. What am I going to do? So we talked about it. The other partners and I talked about it. And we said, you know what? Let's go to our number two customer, our second biggest customer, who have paid us religiously every month. We know what they're going to pay us every month for the next year. What do we ask? Why don't we ask them for a discount on a year's worth of payments that they're going to pay us? And this way, we'll have the liquidity we need to make payroll and do some other capital improvements we wanted to do for our company, like hire more people. So we opened, we were honest, we went to our number two customer, we said, hey, we are in a capital crunch right now, we just prepaid for this conference, we want to make you an offer. If you can pay us a year's worth of your invoices up front, we're going to give you a 20% discount on those invoices. Not a minute went by, the CFO said, absolutely, done. Why? They just created a 20% return on their money. In the meantime, they were able to fund our needs, not only payroll, but hiring people and doing some other things. So there are so many small suppliers that are in similar scenarios. As long as they know they have a conduit to communicate to their customers that they're in a situation, they'll find more often than not that their customers will be excited to support them and happy to support them because they're in it together. And I think so. I think that's why I say communication is an important part of creating a healthy discounting program.
And the way I tell Tamir is, I don't know which world you're living in, because in today the platform offers that communication. He doesn't have to call. There's a click of a button saying pay me now, and he can choose his invoices, define his own needs, offer a rate that he thinks is right, and then offer that, and his customer can immediately approve and make that payment happen. And that's really, no, in all seriousness, his point is very valid. That communication is extremely important. But I think more and more in today's world, you see modern platforms offer that communication in a seamless way, right? So it doesn't require him to pick the phone and try to figure that out, because the buyer has already said, I am open to this program. Here are the suppliers that I've enabled on this program. He has a supplier has full access to his invoices. He can choose how much capital he needs now. He can pick the right invoices. He can offer his terms. He doesn't have to go by and say 20%. He can say, I'll do it. He can decide the value of money for him, right? I mean, and that's where the balance of trade is, right? I mean, like between the buyer and supplier, each party can decide the value of that working capital for them and make the call. And the system helps, the platform helps navigate that communication. But Tamir is absolutely right. Knowledge of that model existing, and making sure that you have a tool that can easily allow you to do that is absolutely critical to making this successful.
So I love it, Rajiv, because you literally took the words out of my mouth. I was going to be like, Tamir, absolutely. And as a small business owner, I can relate to this. But I've also seen the organizations where you have
thousands, if not dozens of thousands of suppliers. And as much as I love to talk to my suppliers and my clients, you cannot pick up the phone 10,000 times a month. So let me actually be the devil's advocate here for a minute. What you're explaining, Rajiv, makes a lot of sense, and all for the communication. That would require both suppliers and customers to be on the same platform. How is it in reality? How is that possible and doable? I suppose it is. But like, can you walk me through how you make sure to onboard? Because it would be going into the supplier system and system environment and say, hey, by the way, you need to implement this one so we're going to be able to communicate better and have this form of program in place. But I might be like, hey, guys, I already have my guys. I'm happy of them. Like, the hell is happening? So how does that all work in reality?
Yeah. And Guillaume, you know, excuse me, but I'm going to give you a concrete example. You know, I think... you know, we operate as part of Coupa, and this is exactly the vision that we have laid out, right? You know, today the platforms that make this kind of model successful are two-sided platforms which face on both sides. You're absolutely right. I mean, there are a lot of companies who would say, hey, you send me a file here, you send me a file there. Technically it's possible, but truly the platforms that are becoming successful are platforms who can face it on both sides, right? And this is where, you know, we are opening up as a company to a model where we are open to both sides as businesses and manage all their transactions independent of whether the transaction flows through us or not, right? I mean, this is where as a platform, we are looking at a business and saying, bring all your payables into Coupa. Those payables can be associated with any supplier. You know, you may not have all that transaction going through, but we proffer you a simple way to bring those payables in. Same thing for your supplier, right? I mean, the direction we are thinking about is bring all your receivables in, right? And we can help bring a marketplace model to that. And this is what is required for businesses to succeed here. So you are absolutely right. If I as a business have to think about 10 different ways of doing this, it is complex. But I think the more mature platforms are offering a much more seamless way. And look, I think the other thing that's helping us as we go along this journey is technology for sure, right? We are talking about being in the 2020s. Integrating to platforms and integrating between systems has become much, much, much more simpler, right? I mean, there are connectors available to connect between ERP systems and other platforms. There are partners available to make that communication happen. Is there complexity involved? There is some, right? I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say, hey, it's just click of a button. No, but I feel like things have come to a place where I think that model is much and much seamless now, right? I mean, in my previous job, before I started working on the payment side, I used to be responsible for all cloud to enterprise integrations across businesses. So I understand going from what it takes for a system to integrate with another, there is complexity, but the maturity of how platforms work with each other, the open standards with which we operate has made this much more simpler. And I think that is what is helping businesses understand the value of this. It's coming to a place where business owners can self-service some of this themselves. That ease is coming in. It requires some IT investment when you start looking at much bigger, you know, enterprises and much more complex scenarios. When you're talking about cross-border payments, when you're talking about global, it does bring a complex IT ecosystem in it. But I feel like now is the time to start, you know, doing that because you have the technology, you have the backing of all the components that are required to make it happen. And that really helps. And like I said, Coupa as a platform, that's been our journey. That's been our journey to open this up as a model where all businesses can operate, whether you're doing supply chain design and planning, whether you're doing procurement, invoicing, payments, treasury and cash management, you see a single place where you can see the value of it. I mean, in fact, I think maybe we'll talk about this later, but we are also thinking about how we can use components like, you know, netting as a component, not just to do netting within your own subsidiaries, but ability to do cross-company netting where we have buyers and suppliers on the same platform and you buy and sell to each other. So can we net cross-company invoices to, you know, even support that model? So there's a lot of innovation, Guillaume, that I believe will be coming into these platforms. There's a lot of innovation that's happened already. And I think it's going in the right direction to make this friendlier for businesses to manage their cash and working capital.
Makes a lot of sense. Sorry for our listeners. It was quite a tangent, but I think quite an interesting one, diving into dynamic discounting. So let me take us back to AP, procurement, and treasury. What are the main interdependencies? I think we've laid down quite some of those, but I'm interested in talking about payment terms. For instance, we recently released an episode about payment fraud, and we were talking about the procure to pay, which is the whole chain, right? Which you need to be aware of what everybody's doing and work together. So maybe looking at you, Tamir, what are the main interdependencies that you see between procurement, AP, treasury? Is treasury in the middle? Is it at the end of the chain? How does it all work?
Yeah, I think from a process flow, treasury is at the end of the chain because ultimately, treasury holds the keys to the bank accounts, right? So they're the final ones responsible for making sure, number one, the payment actually happens, and number two, there's enough money in the bank account so that the bank account doesn't go overdrawn, right? So let's start with that. Now, let's work backwards a little bit. Treasury is in the best position to understand the liquidity position of the firm. Are we long cash for today, for the week, for the month, for the quarter? Are we flat cash? Are we short cash? A good treasurer and treasury team understands all, as is able to forecast as much as they need to ensure the liquidity health of the company for some period of time. Now, back to accounts payable. Accounts payable needs to think outside more than their window of, I just received an invoice, I have to make a payment. They should have the visibility to say, wait a second, I just have these 10 invoices. Let's make it a simple company. I have 10 invoices to pay. What's my liquidity position related to these invoices, the amount of these invoices, when the invoices are due to be paid, right? Because if we are short liquidity, I want to do everything in my power to make sure I can extend the payment to these suppliers to the last day possible. And if I can, what are my payment methods that I can use? Because maybe I can send an electronic payment on day 30, but what if I can make a payment via credit card, for example? Because if I can pay via credit card, even if I have to pay that supplier earlier than day 30 that we contracted, if I can pay on day 10 and that supplier will accept credit card, I'm not going to receive a credit card statement from my credit card provider for another 30 to 30 days. And then I have another 20 days to pay this credit card issuer who gave me the credit. So these are the types of things that I think are critical in terms of visibility that AP and Treasury need to work together on when it comes to invoice by invoice, payment by payment. What are my options? How are we thinking about ensuring the health of this company when it comes to liquidity? Because if we run out of money, we're in big trouble. So I think the ability to create that type of visibility and understand the flexibility we have around times, dates, and payment methods can really enhance that health.
And just to give another concrete example here, this came from one of our customers, so I shouldn't take credit for it, but I'll just tell you the story. I mean, the story was as simple as this. I mean, a business had decided to get into a new partnership, right? A new partnership was around autonomous driving, and they were getting into this new business partnership, and they had signed up a new contract with this supplier. And, you know, interestingly, the contract was a long-term contract, and there was a purchase order created and everything. What was forgotten was there was a prepayment due within the next 30 days. Prepayment, a sizable prepayment due within the next 30 days. And the treasurer had no clue that this was coming their way because, hey, it's a long-term contract, like Tamir said. I mean, like, you know, we'll get an invoice and we'll pay it, but there was a prepayment due. And now you have a treasury team trying to figure out, how do I get this cash in this right currency, right? And if I had known it earlier, I would be able to hedge for it. I would be able to get the, you know, right reserves that I want so that I don't have to make a last minute FX payment and take the hit, right? And this is exactly where, Guillaume, the problem is. Like Tamir said rightly, the process-wise, the payment, the treasury is the last step in the process where they control the payment going out. But what they need to know early on is, what are the kind of suppliers or businesses that your business is going to contract with, right? Which jurisdiction and which currencies are they in? Can treasury influence what is the currency of payment for that supplier? Maybe they can, maybe they cannot, but at least they're aware of it early on, right? So that they can guide the contracting team, the procurement team, by providing that. Because the treasury team knows in advance that these are the currencies that they manage, you know, sufficient balances, and these are the currencies they can go and get at the right pricing that they want, but these are not, right? So this is where we feel like the treasurer, while holds the key and makes the payment at the end, needs to be upfront working with procurement, working with AP to make such decisions. I'm not saying working as in day to day, but as an approver or maybe as a guide for these procurement teams before they go and make this. Because at the end, whether you're a chief procurement officer, whether you're a controller, whether you're a treasurer, your interest is the success of your business. You're part of the CFO's organization. Your interest is the success of your business. And you have to work with each other to make such kind of decisions, because we're not talking small numbers right now, right? I mean, these are multi-year big contracts. And if there's a prepayment involved and nobody knows about it, you know, maybe had a side bathroom conversation saying, hey, by the way, it's due in 5 days. Go figure it out how to pay it, right? I mean, that's how people know about it nowadays, right? I mean, think about it. So this is what needs to change. This is what needs to change. And this is how, you know, these three key players in the office of the CFO can make themselves strategic to the business. When they work together and they are able to come together in a meaningful way so that they can make these business decisions more effective. But I completely agree with Tamir. These are examples of how we can bring them early on in the life cycle. You know, they don't have to do procurement. That's not the intent, but they are becoming strategic advisors to procurement, right? That's how they need to think about it. Treasurers can be very strategic advisors to procurement, and so can procurement be good advisors to treasury, right? I mean, it's a very symbiotic relationship.
I love that. Let's dig a little bit further into this. And that's maybe where we can start also talking about what you guys do at Coupa. How do you make that happen from a pragmatic standpoint? Because again, I think it's on the paper, in the theory, that's perfect. I would love that. All for the bathroom talks and further. Actually, when you look at the organization chart as well, right? Procurement tend to report to the CPO, maybe the COO. They are not as linked to the CFO as obviously AP and Treasury would be. So they might even have different agendas or at least different KPIs to report on. So how do you make that happen in an organization with clear benefits? And I love that you highlighted this example, Rajiv, because that's exactly this. Like, guys, there is money throughout the whole chain to be made here if communicated properly. So how do you make that happen?
Maybe I'll start, Amir, add on to it from your side, okay? And Guillaume, I think this is, in my opinion, a two-sided transformation, right? There's an organizational and a process transformation to be had. And I want Tamir to kind of highlight those things. I'm a product guy, so let me start from the platform by giving you a very simple, concrete example. Today, in the product, in the platform that we have around Coupa and Coupa Pay, every PO that gets approved, PO, creates a cash flow forecast in Treasury. Let me pause there for a minute. Every PO, not a payment creating, that we all know. Everybody can say, hey, payment creates a forecast in Treasury. That's the easy part. Every PO creates a forecast in Treasury. So when there is a prepayment milestone, for the example that I gave you, that treasurer, without any bathroom talks, is aware in the platform that there is a payment due for that purchase order for a prepayment in the next 15 days. Look, I deeply believe that it is a streamlined platform that can give the visibility and the edge to businesses to make this happen. And we need to make that, right? As soon as a PO is approved, there is a forecast. So there is visibility, early visibility, right? Hey, there'll be an invoice coming in the next so many days. This invoice, as soon as the invoice is approved, that cash flow forecast is updated. As soon as the invoice is paid, that's updated. So just from that perspective, from a platform strategy standpoint, that's where technology helps break down the silos and give the visibility to these teams. They didn't have it. And I'm telling you, even today, a lot of them don't have it, right? The fact that they are in separate systems makes their life so much more difficult that they don't have that kind of visibility. And that's kind of the kind of work that we're doing. And we feel this is the way by which treasurers who are within their world looking at everything, right? I mean, they are looking at cash flow forecasts. They are looking at cash pooling. They're looking at investing cash. They're doing all that great stuff. And to Tamir's story, when he started as a treasurer, if he had these early forecasts coming to him, he would have had visibility into what he would have had to plan for. So I genuinely believe in that. But having said that, technology by itself and platform by itself doesn't happen, right? I mean, like, you need to have a good organizational model and a good process. And I feel like the office of the CFO is moving in that structure, right? I mean, if you look at it, modern organizations have, you know, AP, Treasury, FP&A, and procurement all as part of the office of the CFO. And I think that's where the direction is, so that there is a common set of goals and KPIs, and there's a unified platform that helps. But I'll let Tamir add more thoughts onto the streamlining the process and that organization.
Thanks, Rajiv. That's very good point. So when I think about it from a practitioner point of view, let's start with, and I'm thinking about the question you asked, Guillaume, right? Which is, how do we drive this? Get it? And it sounds good on theory, but how do we actually make it happen? Again, so let's start basic. The basic mandates of a treasury operations team and a treasurer is make sure all my payments get out to the right place, and that we're not incurring fraud, and that we're not overdrawn in our bank accounts. We start there. We take it to the next level. Let's talk about our cost of capital. When we get into cost of capital, now we are transcending really into the office of the CFO. And when I as a treasurer can demonstrate to our CFO that we can reduce our cost of capital by thinking more smartly about what procurement is doing, where our suppliers are, what our payment terms are, what our FX risks might be. When I go to the CFO and I talk about, is our accounts payable team being thoughtful around those payment terms, the method of payment? As a treasurer, I can put on the superhero cape now and go to the CFO and say, I can reduce our cost of capital by 75 basis points, which may lead to $2 a share on our share price. And let me show you how I'm going to do that. You want to talk about being able to make change happen? That's how you do it. And I think a treasurer, when it comes to the role or the process around procurement, suppliers, and payments, treasury and treasurers are in the unique position to facilitate a reduction in the cost of capital related to that process by being able to tell that story.
I love that. Corporate Treasury 101, we are super strong on treasurers leading the transformation journey. And what you just pointed here, Tamir, is, hey guys, you can just go and make your business case here. Because at the end of the day, that's also what matters for the CFOs, right? Transformation and communication is great, but they want to see the numbers. Guys, we can make you earn 75 basis points throughout the whole year on the cost, average cost of capital. And here's how we're going to do it. And there you have the funds to lead your transformation journey and actually align everybody to say, guys, that's the goal and that's how we're going to reach it. And here are the benefits for everybody. Absolutely love that. So from what you've seen, guys, in helping all those companies, what are the things that beyond the working together, what are the things each treasury department can learn from one another? Sorry, not treasury department, treasurers, procurement, and AP. What are the... beyond the interdependencies, the thing you've seen that, oh, actually, I didn't know that you were operating like these guys. That makes my job way easier if I knew it, because I can like start upfront and do something like this. Have you seen such things, like just people by communicating and looking synergies just because, oh, actually, we can learn from each other?
Yeah, I think we could start with some lighthearted jokes here, Guillaume. I think you will like this as well. Let me start by saying something here. Education, I think you doing a series like this, I think we want to really thank you for it, because one of the things we feel is there's lack of education around just what we are talking about within this community. You know, I'm not being disrespectful, but I feel like these communities have been siloed in just thinking about their own world so far. I mean, there was a time when procurement didn't talk to AP, and there was a time when AP didn't talk to Treasury, and Treasury didn't talk. And that's real, and that exists. And why I said a joke is, you know, at our user conference, we've had a few of these where, you know, we have seen treasurers and chief procurement officers and controllers from the same company greeting each other as though they're talking to each other for the first time because they met at our conference. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not joking.
That's crazy. But I heard this. It's crazy.
This is where I feel like, you know, education and just awareness and breaking down these silos is, in my opinion, step number one, right? And the more we can all talk about this and see this as strategic for all of us, I think it's important. Sometimes, and again, I just want to be totally open out there. Sometimes people see this and say, you know, I'm a treasurer. For me, this is like a small thing, right? I don't want to deal with this. I mean, that kind of thinking does exist. Not in everybody, but it does exist. And I think the more they can come out of that and open their world to this, to Tamir's point, they can be that superhero in front of the CFO saying, I looked at this transformation in this the world of supply chain, and I'm willing to bet that we can reduce our cost of capital. We can build a healthy supply chain that's going to help in the top line of our company, right? I mean, that kind of conversation, I feel like is great for a treasurer. If I were, you know, playing that role, I would feel like that makes me more strategic in the organization. And that makes me a key player with a seat at the table, whether it's with the CFO or maybe even with the CEO, because this is what everybody wants. And I feel like we are lacking that education. And we honestly thank you for bringing this kind of topic together and making this open up, because that's where we feel step one is for us to, you know, break down the silos, educate people, and lead the transformation. Tell me your thoughts on this.
I fully agree with everything you said. It's a really around education. Like I said, Guillaume, I honestly can say when I came to Coupa with my treasury practitioner experience, I didn't have nearly the appreciation for the impact that procurement and even AP had when it came to me trying to fine tune how much impact they could have on the different parts of what my responsibilities were as a treasurer and cash manager, which is how much liquidity do I have? How much yield am I earning on that liquidity? How much working capital flexibility do I have? So it really is about that education. And on the treasurer, I think, to drive with those other two groups, with AP and with procurement, that, hey, let me explain how the decisions you're making impact not only my team in treasury, but our firm, our company. And I think that's when you'll get the buy-in. And that's really the important part that treasury needs to lead is to ensure they have that buy-in from the other parts of the company that have an impact that I think otherwise they don't realize they have that impact.
And you know, one more thing to add is some of these models make these back office teams even a little bit like a revenue generating team. Not a big point, but you know, when they are talking about things like discounting, when they're able to generate return on cash. You know, Tamir mentioned about, you know, using a virtual card as a payment method and generating rebates. You know, a lot of companies actually fund their entire digital transformation based on returns that they get by improved working capital and DPO adjustments that they make by using the right choices. So it's not like, you know, we are in an economic condition where, you know, you have to justify, you know, your budget for this. And if you're able to showcase, justify it by a proper business case, and then able to showcase it year after year, saying this is the amount of return that I generated, and that's actually funding this, you know, project and this opportunity, that's a pretty powerful thing. And I think they can't do it by themselves in silos, but if they, you know, hold hands together between procurement, AP, and treasury, I think they're going to see that return on capital and the value that they can bring, you know, being responsible for their own transformation. And I think that's a pretty powerful statement that we should make for all of them together.
100%. I'd like to put the spotlight a bit on Coupa. And I suppose it's also self-explanatory based on the content of this episode. But what inspired Coupa and you guys to link those three departments together? Because we've talked to a lot of actors, major actors in the place, obviously. And I'm going to play also the devil's advocate, because spotlight also comes with the price on it. Some people might think, okay, by wanting to be everywhere at the same time, you're kind of nowhere. But at the same time, it's by making sure to link the departments with each other, because as you very accurately said, Rajiv, it's like we are two sided. It's not a one size fits all, but it's also not a one person's game. Like by communicating, we just enable synergies. It is how it is. So what inspired you to actually build a platform that would link those departments together where other actors in the place would rather focus on what, for instance?
And I'll start, and Tamir, feel free to add. Look, I think the Coupa journey started somewhere in 2007, 2008, early, where we were like, the idea was very simple. Hey, if you can use Amazon to buy things at home, we need something simple to buy things at work. Right, that was the idea with which it started. So it was a very procurement-centric thinking and a great way to start, right? Simple user experience, simple capabilities to start. 2009, 2010, we were kind of framing that idea. We were kind of massaging it. And really, I would say starting 2009, 2010 it's that decade that started bringing us forward. And at that point, and you wouldn't believe this, but if I told you today, at that point, procurement didn't talk about AP, and AP didn't care about procurement. So we are not talking anything new. This has always been the case, right? I mean, now we talk about P2P as a platform, but at one point, P2P was never a platform. It was procurement and their world, and it was AP at their world. So what inspired us to think? It is our customers. Talking to our customers and understanding what we saw at these businesses, which was heavily siloed and very inefficient, prompted us to think, hey, if you buy something, you got to pay for it, right? How difficult it can be. You ask me to tell you about a five-year-old. This is how I tell my daughter. And like, what do you do at work, Dad? Like, hey, you know, you go on Amazon, you buy things. Imagine if I just let you go without having to pay for it. She was like, oh, that'll be great. I love that. I just get free.
Let's do it.
Yeah. And honestly, that's kind of what these platforms were. Jokingly, we were called the procure to okay to pay platforms. I mean, think about it. Procure to okay to pay. What does that even mean? You buy something, you pay for it, right? I mean, you're truly talking about one seamless process. So our journey started with seeing some of these things in silos. The first silo was, hey, between just procurement and AP itself, right? POs in one world and invoices in the other world. Remember when we started talking, you had asked, what is the best way by which these platforms and projects can succeed? You asked, and I said, keep it simple. Give them one place. No, people were going to 10 places. I still keep hearing stories. My POs are here. My invoices are there. When I first joined in Coupa in 2013, somebody asked me, hey, how do I integrate POs from your system to invoices in my system? I'm like, why are you even talking about that? It's all in one place. I mean, people were not even willing to take that thinking, right? Then came the next phase of integration. Like I said, procure to okay to pay to really payments. I mean, it was very clear for us when we started this journey, and we're very proud of thinking about it this way. We said, we feel that this should be one seamless experience for a business. You buy, invoice, pay, right? That should not be like 10 different ways to think about it. It's one seamless experience. So we very strongly went with a mandate and an investment to build Coupa Pay into Coupa and bring that capability end to end. And then it was another part was extremely simple. Hey, when you want to make a payment, you need cash. You need to know where your money is, in which bank account, in which currency, and is it there at the right time? Yes, you need cash management and you need credit. So from our standpoint, if you look at it, this story has been an extremely clear way of us understanding from our customers the challenges and the silos that they face, and us looking at a process and looking at what's the best way to streamline it. Right. I mean, and that's the journey we have been and we continue to be, and we get to learn more and improve. And honestly, the feedback that we get from our customers is the same. This helps. This is helping us break down those silos. This is helping us become that one platform that is strategic to our organization. Right. I mean, if you look at it from a big picture view, Guillaume, think of it this way. Right. You take any business. Right. You have a CRM platform to manage your customers. You have a human capital manager and HCM platform to manage your employees. You have your ERP where accounting happens so that you can support your shareholders with, you know, your reports and everything. And you have a spend management platform like Coupa where you can manage your suppliers and your spend, right? And that's it. Four core applications that any business needs to manage their operations. And we are one of the four that allows you to streamline everything from your buying, your invoicing, your payments, and your cash, and help you manage your entire supply chain with that. And that's our vision. That's what we are marching towards. That's what we are executing on. And we feel like that is where people need their help to bring it together, break those silos and streamline it, right? And do we have learnings? Do we improve? Absolutely, yes. Are we perfect on everything? No, right? But that's where we see our vision and the future, and that's where the transformation that we are leading as a platform. And that's our goal.
Wow. Tamir, anything to add to that?
I support Rajiv in helping him achieve that vision, because I think that he and I have been lucky enough to find each other and work together on this. And it's been a a synergy type of effect where I have a much better appreciation for how hard these things are to build. And I'm hopeful that he has a better appreciation for what it's like to be in the seat, in the treasurer's seat, to have to make a decision with a moment to spare, and you feel like the plane's about to land, and are we going to land safely, right? And the intensity and urgency around that. And those are two different parts of the equation that I think we've synergized really well to ensure that we're trying to build a platform that solves for reality on the ground.
I absolutely agree. I think this has been one of the best relationships to learn from a business practitioner like Thamir and use that to influence what goes into our platform and our product. So I think all his experiences where he talks about his stories from Goldman Sachs and so many other places where he has been on the ground kind of doing this is really an inspiration for us to see how our product can get better and better. So I totally agree with you, Thamir. A very symbiotic relationship that's been very helpful on all sides.
Gentlemen, it was an absolute masterpiece. Learned a lot and had quite lots of fun as well. Maybe to get that episode to an end, what advice would you give to the treasurers listening to us who are looking to actually improve their interactions between those three departments that we touched upon, enhance the collaboration and unlock the synergies that we set out literally here, but it takes work. What would be your advice to those treasurers listening to us right now?
My number one piece of advice would be, don't be afraid to ask questions and reach out. You need to be able to do that. If you can be the first one to start the process with the other groups, you'll be the one helping to drive the change. And again, I think about it as being the treasury superhero. That's my goal. I want every treasurer to be the superhero in their organization, and it starts with them being the first one to take the leap. If they can be the first one to take the leap, others will follow.
Yeah, I'll totally agree. I think please be open to change. And please drive that change as a leader. Break down that silos and you will see the potential. And we tremendously believe in the potential because we see customers who have done it. And that's why we're talking. We're not talking based on anything else. We're seeing customers actually make this change and be so much more successful.
Guys, thank you so much. Is there anything that we didn't talk about the different topic we mentioned that you'd like to add, or did we cover it all or almost?
Yeah, I think we did a pretty good job covering it all.
I agree.
I think we touched on it. And like I said, I want to thank you because it's good to bring this kind of a broader topic and help all the different teams. As much as we're talking to treasurers, asking them about AP and procurement, I would also like AP and procurement teams to understand treasury. I mean, when Thamir brought all his experience, for me, it was a good learning to understand about treasury. I would encourage the other way around as well.
So I'm checking right now. I don't think the Procurement 101 podcast exists. So Rajiv, if you're keen on joining me as a co-host, maybe that's an initiative we can launch in the coming in the coming future.
I think the three of us are doing a good job. Let's do one more.
Exactly. A trio would be great. Amazing. If people would like to know more about you, Thamir, you, Rajiv, or Kupa, where should they go?
I think the best start is, Guillaume will share our email addresses if they need to, but also our website, kupa.com. They can find out everything across our entire platform, but specifically treasury, payments, and procurement. Wherever they want to dive into, I think our website is the best place to start with.
Amazing. We'll put all the links in the descriptions. And thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Guillaume.